Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
What makes us human? Our emotions, our ability to communicate and express ourselves, the ability to create culture, creating tools for advancement, or just plain creativity. I think my co-host is going to agree with me that there are other animals in the animal kingdom who do those sorts of things. So perhaps what makes us human is the ability to create and share and reflect on stories. Our creativity, our imagination, and the ability combined to create stories reflecting on meaning and purpose. Perhaps that is what makes us human. Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is the start of a new series called All Reading Counts. We know that there are many ways to consume stories, whether it's books or graphic novels or audiobooks or movies or games or role-playing games. There's so many ways to consume stories. And we at Systematic Geekology want to in another way to share, you have permission to consume the stories you want to consume and how you want to consume them. So All Reading Counts. We have some merch that have All Reading Counts on it. And the merch that we sell during this time in the series, and even some of our bonus questions and some of our Patreon money is going to go towards libraries. And advocating for those great things called libraries to give back to the community, because that's what we're about. We love all these stories. There's so much geeky content and so many ways to consume a story. And so we want to give back a little bit and then share, like, All Reading Counts. And I can't do this alone. It was a dark and stormy night, and I was scared and nervous, and I needed help. And who did I call on? A friend. To come help me sort through this hurricane of all the geeky content that's out there. And I caught on my friend, TJ. He was there for me. TJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the introduction. We love the hurricanes.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of hurricanes, it's playoff season. They're doing well. TJ, for our friends at YouTube, why don't you show them your new jersey? That wasn't even planned. Ooh. That little part where I'm talking about hurricane, there's a deep cut there, Easter egg for the story we're going to talk about tonight. And so there it is, the hurricane.
I don't want to stand up again.
Okay. You have a limit. Showed me before. You showed me before this. Yeah, but the Carolina Hurricanes in the playoffs. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite stories, favorite novels of all time. And it starts off, the first sentence in the book is, "It was a dark and stormy night." And that's how she starts. We're talking about Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time. And this particular story comes in all formats as well. It comes in the format of a book that was written and published in 1962. I read it in the 80s and 70s and 80s when I was in elementary school and middle school. And then they made it into like a movie. It's been an audio book. It has a great graphic novel adaptation that I'll share here in a little bit that I think is really, really cool. That's what I did to reread for today. I read the graphic novel. And so it's been in all formats, and it's kind of a classic book and novel that I think encompasses a wide range of genres, which is kind of why we're talking about this as well. And so TJ, TJ, first of all, when you think of all reading counts, what comes to mind? This is from the mind of our good friend Joshua Noel. So mm-hmm. all reading counts, what do you think of? What comes to your mind?
So all reading counts, it's kind of responding to that common rhetoric that, you know, you can't just read comic books. You can't read manga comic books. That doesn't count. Short stories, that's not really reading. Mm-hmm. It is. It counts. That's reading.
Yeah.
Now, I personally think you should not only read one form of reading, literature, but it all does count as reading, even audiobooks.
Yeah.
That was contentious.
That one is contentious. And I think that comes up because I think, doesn't Joshua do some audiobooks? Did he consume some stories?
There's a lot of audiobooks at 2x speed or as high as he can go.
Man. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm not going to judge that. I can't do that. I wish I could do more audiobooks, but it makes me sleepy. It's like someone reading me a bedtime story. And so if I listen to it in my car, I'm getting sleepy. I do like podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts in my car, earbuds, mowing the lawn. If I was going to go back and read like the Thrawn trilogy with that, I'd probably audiobook that. And maybe The Name of the Wind that we still need to talk about at some point. One of my favorite stories of all time. That might be an audiobook form. But we'll get to that at some point. Yeah, I agree. Like all reading counts. People are like, man, comic books, graphic novels, manga, audiobooks, novels, short stories. There's so many ways. And we want to just share that, you have permission to read or consume stories how you want. So all reading counts. Boom. There you go. Anything else there, TJ, you want to add before we leave it out? Sure we'll talk more about it as it goes.
There's a lot of semantics there. Just because the word count in a comic book might not be super high,
right,
doesn't mean it's not reading, you know? I mean, it's different. Reading a comic book is like reading a chapter of a story in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Most cases.
I like your pun and play on words when it comes to count. Like word count, page count, all reading counts. I see what you did there. I don't know if that was planned or not.
Never.
So we are going to talk about one of my favorite stories of all time, A Wrinkle in Time. It's been on the schedule for a while. We've tried to find a good place to put it on the schedule and when we're going to talk about this book out there in podcast land, YouTube land. Let us know. When did you discover this book? What is your relationship to this book? Do you like this book? Was it foundational? For me, it was foundational because I was not a kid that liked to read. I was not a great reader when I was in elementary school. It was hard for me to read or keep my attention, to sit down for long amounts of time to read. And then, I wasn't that great of a student when it comes to like grammar, English, all that stuff. So I just kind of bored. I did read some comic books because of the pictures and surfing magazines, but there were books that stood out during that time, even when I wasn't considered a quote unquote reader. And my wife has her doctorate in language and literacy and teaches language and literacy in college. So anyway, she could help coach us in this too. But even at that time when I was not like a strong reader, quote unquote, I did like the Narnia books and I did like A Wrinkle in Time and her books because I think it had that fantasy aspect of it. And it kind of gripped my attention and led me into imaginary land and really captured my love for kind of the hero's journey when it comes to that. So I did read this particular book. When I got later on into later high school, early college, I discovered theology and I discovered Tolkien. I discovered other books. I was like, I really like reading. I just started consuming all that I can. There isn't a day that go by that I don't read a book or a comic book or a theology book or something in my life. My stack of books is tall. I remember this being assigned late elementary, maybe early high school. What's kind of your relationship to this book, TJ?
Yeah. So for me, it wasn't the 80s. It was the 10s, the 2010s.
2010s. When
I was in like 10th grade.
Yeah.
I was between series because I like to read a series. I don't want to just one and done, which is actually, unfortunately, what I did with The Wrinkle of Time. Because immediately after I read A Wrinkle in Time, I read The Way of Kings.
Ooh.
And then... That kind of
who's the author of that? That's the
Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah, nice. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Amazing series. But I did like A Wrinkle in Time. I feel really bad that it got its moment stolen by the good man, Mr. Sanderson.
Yeah, I hear you.
But it is really cool. It's fun to read old books, especially, you know, back then they weren't super concerned about marketability. They weren't trying to fit into a niche. So A Wrinkle in Time is like sci-fi, fantasy, religious exploration. It's really cool. It's really fun. It gets mystical, it gets spiritual, which is the same for some people.
Yeah.
Still fun.
Yeah. And share a little bit of background. You can go back and read a Wikipedia page, or I read about Madeleine Engel, her story, and the background of her books and how she got into being a novelist and a storyteller. You know, she was born in 1918, died in 2007. She was born in New York City from, like, her father was a writer. Her mother was a classical pianist, concert pianist. And they moved to Florida for a little while to get out of New York City. And then they were in Charleston for a while. She was in school in Charleston for a little bit, and then went to Smith College, moved to Greenwich Village in New York City, met her husband, who was a playwright and an actor, and they're really into theater. But when they started having kids, they were trying to think of what's next, what do they do? And so she started writing stories, and was really having a hard time finding kind of her niche of what she wanted to write. Writer's block, some of that stuff. And then interesting enough, like, her minister, she's a faithful Episcopalian, has been Episcopalian her whole life. And you can see that her Christian faith is a deep part of who she is and what she writes about and how it's a part of her books. But her minister recommended to her, similar to like Martin Luther's story of his abbot saying, hey, go study the Bible and get out of this existential crisis that you're in. Her minister encouraged her to read like German theologians and read theology. And she kind of got bored and sleeping. She said it put her to sleep, but it was her reading and studying physics and Albert Einstein and the, you know, late 50s, early 60s, in this time of like quantum mechanics and quantum physics, like captured her imagination and creativity. And then it sparked this idea of A Wrinkle in Time, where she could incorporate both her faith and science and the hero's journey. And so, her publisher didn't know what to do with this book. They're like, what is this? Is it for children? Is it for adults? If it's young adults, it has like some weird like mysticism, but also quantum physics and math. So how are kids going to understand what you're even writing about? And she was like, you know, this is a story I want to tell. And believe it or not, TJ, believe it or not, when she finished this book, there were Christians who wanted to ban this book because it involved witchcraft and New Age talk. But then on the other end, she's stuck in the middle. On the other end, there were people who weren't Christian who were like, it's too Christian. You talk about Jesus, you quote Psalms, you have these like mystical celestial beings that are angels, like singing directly out of the Bible. Stories out of the Bible, like, this is too Christian. So she was kind of caught in the middle and people didn't know what to do with her. Can you believe that, TJ, that there are people who would be offended on both sides of this?
What? No way.
I know.
What?
I know. It's weird. You wouldn't think that would happen, but it did. It happened there in the 60s, happened in the 80s, and then she's always kind of been in this kind of – we'll talk more about a book later on that I love, that I recommend. It's this like her being both a Christian and an artist and a Christian artist and what that means, but just wanted to write a good story and put it out there. And people – because it's been a classic ever since. So is it – what would you classify it, TJ? Would you classify this sci-fi? Would you classify it fantasy, Christian allegory? What genre is this book?
I would say it's sci-fi fantasy for sure.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Got it.
Because like at the time she's writing this, she quotes Max Planck in the book relative to his work in quantum physics, which at the time, I think like as a field, quantum physics was only like 40 years old when this book came out.
That's amazing.
And Max Planck didn't start writing until like 10 or 15 years before this book came out.
Right.
That's crazy. That's so like cutting edge for like a novel that, you know, I feel like it is young adult. Maybe I wish there was a genre between young adult and like child, like old teenager.
Tween.
That's where I feel like it fits in best because I love her because she thought what I have always believed and lots of other people also believe now, It's becoming a lot more common. It's easier to like teach a kid something than an adult.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, kids don't know a whole lot. So they have nothing in there to tell them like, no, that can't be right.
Mm.
They're just like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Not too many roadblocks in there. Yeah, in her book that I'll share later on, keep listening, what book that is, she talks about like children, this ability to have imagination and to accept story because they're open to the possibilities of learning and not having airtight answers, but that's why they ask a lot of questions. What, why, how, you know, all those question marks that go along with just discovering the world, and they let their imaginations run. That they're open to those things, and perhaps that's why Jesus said, you know, be like little children, not to be childish, but to be open to the possibilities of imagination and what God's up to in the world. Yeah, I love that the science of her day was cutting edge, unfolding the fabric of the universe and understanding how it works, and that was a challenge to some people. And we've had this discussion before that faith and science often have this tension between it, and people try to set these up against one another, a winner or a loser. But here in this book, she combines the two. So if people ask me, like, what is it, sci-fi, fantasy, Christian allegory? I'll say, yep, it is. Mm-hmm. It's all those things on top of one another. Is it for kids? Is it for adults? Young adults? Yes, for all. If it's an easy read if you're an avid reader, an adult, but yet there's still the story and the hero's journey of an outcast, an oddball who is wrestling with grief and where they fit in this world that then someone from something from outside themselves call them to a journey to something deeper. Into a wider universe and what that means for them and their family and relationships, then man, that's just that's the hero's journey. That's what stories do. So
Good I feel kind of like it. I don't even want to say it's Christian allegory. I feel like it's pretty, it's there. It's pretty on the nose.
Yeah.
They quote John. They quote the Gospel of John in the book.
They sure do. Well, let's get to the plot. Let's talk a little bit here. What, you know, I love the name of my church is Holy Trinity. Chief staple of the Christian faith is the triune faith. God is Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and this triune, divine, mystical dance of relationship and love and entanglement. But this particular book has this kind of series of three. So you have the trilogy of the kids here. You have Meg, her brother Charles, and Calvin. Meg is a 13-year-old kind of misfit with glasses, nerd, oddball, not fitting in. She has these legendary parents. Her mom and dad are super smart. Her dad is this physicist who's missing, and people are speculating why he's missing. Where has he gone? Did he leave the family? Did he run off with a woman? Did he just disappear? Is he dead? So, but her mom believes that he's going to come back. But it kind of starts off on a dark and stormy night, literally in a hurricane and mystery around this family of grief. And Charles, her younger brother, who almost is like clairvoyant. He has these kind of special powers of like knowing what's going to happen or, you know, even like kind of neurodiversity autism about him that I don't know if that's what she would label it, but it's almost that he is a little different in how his brain processes things. And then you have the, a little bit older, but another, the Han Solo of the series, Calvin. Calvin, who's along. So you have Meg, Charles, and Calvin off on this journey who meet a trio, Mrs. What's It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which. And the mystery of who they are is dragged along up to about the middle of this book. And they share a kind of this idea or like, we know where your father is. Come along this journey. We're going to take you where to go. TJ, that's kind of the main characters. How would you describe the plot and where it goes? If you remember, I know it's been a while since you've read it or encountered it, but what sticks out for you in the plot that you remember?
So, you know, there's three kids, there's three guardian angels, and there's three stops on their journey.
That is true. Yeah,
there's a lot of threes. They go to Orion's belt first. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's first. No, they go to Uriel first. The planet, which
first
is
of all, how do they get angel. There? Up to this before they get there, they have like a science physics lesson about wrinkling time and time travel, or how do you get from one place to another? Yeah,
now it's common knowledge thanks to Marvel. Everyone knows what at least a tesseract is, maybe not necessarily a mathematical tesseract, but they have a tesseract which I kind of want to look it up, but there's no way the concept of a Tesseract was that old when she wrote this.
Yeah.
And they use the Tesseract to bend time and space and just kind of teleport around. They call it tessering. So yeah. they tesser them around, which it's also pretty funny because like they're not like equally good at it. One of the Mrs. W's is like better than the other two at it for some reason. I don't know. I just think that's a funny detail. But that's which one can't form a body? One of them like really struggles to form a physical body.
Mrs. Witch, the last one.
She's like really good at tasks.
Because I think they're like crazy old women, like tramps that live. They literally call them tramps. That crazy old women that live in the woods or whatever and stay away from these weird people. But then they're jovial, happy old women who you know take the form of that to be almost like grandma figures. But yeah, you come to find out they're like guardian angels who can take them where they need to go. They're old beings, celestial beings from outer space.
Yeah,
or just and like then, the spiritual realm.
Yeah, and they tesseract these kids around. First to Uriel, which is named after an angel, a planet full of centaur-like beings. If you've seen a cover for the book, I think most of them have like a depiction of the centaurs on the cover. I think one of them doesn't. Yeah, one of two of the ones that I've seen don't. But it's pretty normal for them to be on the front.
If you'd like to support our show, please consider joining our Patreon, where you get live access to our YouTube exclusives, including our comic book catch-up, manga mustard, drinks with Tejas, and our companion series that we do each year with our annual theme. You can also get exclusive merch, including t-shirts, handbags, a coffee mug, and a long sleeve shirt. We also have available bonus extra questions at the end of most of our podcast episodes. You get access to exclusive Discord channels, discounts on our store, access to any future online D&D campaigns. You get to vote on topics for some of our episodes. You can easily access all of the Patreon content right through Spotify now. So super easy. Go to our Spotify page at the top. It's going to say exclusive content for subscribers. If you're a patron, hit that button. You get all of our bonus content right there on Spotify, right with your regular feed. And of course, you get the satisfaction of knowing you helped a podcast in need. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing equipment, recording software, and a lot more. And there's a lot that goes into keeping the lights on here. And we really appreciate all of our Patreon subscribers for helping the show happen.
And then they go to Orion's Belt to meet the, they call him the Happy Medium, which is just fun wordplay. But they take him to Uriel to show them the threat, the problem that is, you know, because it just shows up really well on Uriel. Fine. Hey, look, it's that the black cloud that's called the black thing. We were trying to stop that from happening. It's very classic light versus dark battle, good versus evil. Very cut and dry.
Yeah, it's here that the medium shares this kind of like, yeah, they're witnessing this planet who's been taken over by the darkness. And then they see Earth that is like the darkness is almost there, but there's people who fight against the darkness. Light bringers into the world. And this is where they literally name Jesus. They name Albert Einstein and Bach and the artists and St. Francis. And so they make this list of people of who, and then they quote the Gospel of John. Yeah, Buddha, they quote the Gospel of John, like the light entered the world, the darkness has not overcome it, or the darkness doesn't understand it. So they're quoting John's poetry on light and dark. But they see this planet where they have given in to the darkness and there's no hope. And so there is hope for Earth because there's people who fight against the darkness, but yet this planet is just shrouded in this shadow of darkness.
Yeah, that's their third stop is the dark planet, because the medium shows them that Earth is like being encompassed and they're fighting back. But I love that. I love when like people like heavily romanticize scientists who had big impacts. There is a series that is on a manga series called Record of Ragnarok, which is super awesome, super cool. The anime is bad, which is unfortunate, but it's basically just famous humans fighting, you know, pantheons in a best of 13 1v1 tournament. And Nikola Tesla was one of the recent human combatants.
Wow.
Super sick. Sick. But I love that. It's so fun to me. And they go there to, that is where their father's being held, is the final planet, which. Mm-hmm. In a series with this many concepts, if you're just talking about them, it's kind of easy to lose the plot. But it reads really well. It's not that complicated.
It does. Yeah.
So we get used to the dad. We kind of get his point of view and what he's up to. And they have to get brainwashed by it.
Before Stephen King, she had a villain called It, IT, capital I, capital T. It's not IT to kind of work on your computers or any of that kind of stuff, but it's like It on this dark planet. And when they get to the planet, they kind of get equipped. You know, again, it's like the hero's journey. These celestial beings equip them with tools and remind them how to stay focused and even give her like special eyeglasses to go. And so they can see reality as it is, because they're going to get to this place where reality is going to be warped. But what you notice on this planet is that it's so structured, it's so machine-like that like everybody is outside playing and bouncing the ball at the same time in the same rhythm. All the houses look alike. All the people are walking to this one tower and doing the same thing just to keep the machine going with the utter darkness and things. So again, you see like what is like a nightmare world where everything is the same and doing the same thing without creativity, without diversity, those kinds of things. So that's kind of, you know, that things are off. This dark planet is given in, and even this poor boy bounces a ball wrongly and gets like thrown into like jail or something. Like it gets punished for getting off rhythm of what everyone else is doing in this thing. But they go to this tower, they meet the man with red eyes. Remember that? It's not the main villain, but the man with red eyes, almost like Palpatine. You know, we're Star Wars fans. It's almost like this guy sitting on a throne with red eyes, tempting them, luring them to give in to the darkness, the dark side. You know, again, this is before Star Wars. Did Lucas read this and think about light side and dark side of the Force? I don't know. Maybe. Probably. And Palpatine and this chief person who's trying to tempt them with darkness, you know, again, it's the Bible, lies, darkness, shrouding reality. That's part of the story of scripture too. And then like the youngest, we have Charles who is like lured and becomes overtaken by it. And they discover that it is just a huge like brain. Is that vivid for you? Do you remember
that? Yeah, no, they have like, he has the man with the red eyes as a proxy, and it is just a brain.
Yep. This disembodied brain that's kind of like running the show on this planet. And eventually they get pulled out. They find their father, and whereas Charles is kind of captured mentally, spiritually by it, but they're able to find their dad, and Meg and Calvin take him back, test her out into another planet, right? Another place where they have like Aunt Beast and a couple of like entities. And Meg's determined, look, you know, we can't just, they kind of, everybody else kind of gives up. And it's like, well, they're gone. At least you got your dad. Come on. He needs back on Earth. Or she's like, I'm not giving up on my brother. I'm going back in.
Yeah. So it's like next to the dark planet is where it actually lives. And he just controls the dark planet from, I don't know how to say the other planet.
Yeah, it's a word. It's a fancy word. It's a word.
I think I just call it like Lachel.
Yeah.
It's like LXCHEL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she goes back in, you know, and this is like even a like a hard journey. They found their dad, but this is even harder because there's so much there. The darkness is like going into the deepest, darkest place. But eventually, spoiler, we should say spoiler at the very end, but man, read this book on your own. The journey of how you get there. It's not like super original in the fact that like love is the thing that defeats it. Love is the thing that saves her brother. She leans in, she's like, you know what, regardless of all of these things, what really is behind all this is love. Love will have the final word, and love will bring you home, defeat the darkness. And so love kind of transforms Charles back to his old self, and they test right out of there. They head back home. There's this reunion, and then Mrs. What's It and Mrs. Who and Mr. Witch show back up. They're like, yeah, you did it. But guess what? There's something else we need to do. And then they just bolt, and they're like, what? what just happened? Where they go? And that's how the story ends. It's kind of a cliffhanger. Don't you want to win the net? I think it's The Wind in the Door is the one after this one. I remember reading that one too, but not as much as Wrinkle in Time. So there's kind of the plot of this story. And again, like the, being fans of science, TJ, you and I, being fans of faith and people of faith, how she weaved this together in a story is absolutely amazing. And one of my favorite stories out there. And I love it that, yeah, it is in schools. It is in people's hands and it expresses and weaves these two together. Is there a favorite part of the story for you that you remember that you want to highlight that draws you into it? What was part of her creativity in that?
Honestly, the first time I read it was probably the Tesseract. I spent a lot of time in like 9th, 10th grade trying to like draw a Tesseract well. Mm-hmm. Not easy, right. But I love the concept. It was super cool to me. Just little like one-off physics things that I was interested in. I love seeing it being used. It was great. And at what year is that? 2014. So we're post Avengers already.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, theory of relativity, Albert Einstein, what they were doing, Einstein, about like quantum mechanics, quantum physics, gravity waves, what is time, like all that stuff is there and it's on the forefront, and she was able to weave that in and explain it away that might be a little over like little kids' heads, but you know, you just start thinking about that and have a spiritual dimension to the world of like what end up being these Mrs. Witch, they were stars. They were stars, mm-hmm. literally, who kind of became embodied personalities. And so the celestial beings and guardian angels that were promoted to angels and archangels, and then quoting poetry and scripture in the midst of this, that's what I loved about it too. The basic plot isn't that like groundbreaking. It's the hero's journey. But along the way, just a classic, you know, kids that have a problem, they need to solve it, and they have outside help from spiritual beings, along with talking about science. Man,
yeah.
What else do you need?
And I'm an absolute sucker for a little scientific extrapolation to create a form of space travel. I love that. I'm a huge fan of that. Christopher Paolini did it really well in his new sci-fi novel. I get it feels new. It's 3 or 4 years old now. But To Sleep in a Sea of Stars, the author of Aragon wrote that, and he had, came up with a really, really cool, I want to say it was called like a Markov drive, but a way for them to slip between dimensions, between layers of space. Super sick. I love it. And the Tesseract is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get there one day.
An incomprehensible shape. We use it to basically time travel. And when they get back, they realize like no time has passed at all on Earth. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that kind of Narnia-esque aspect to that. But yeah, they talk about a point. The easiest way to get is a like straight line on two points. But what if you bend it and you bend the middle, you wrinkle it, and you bring it together? Then there you go. You can just go one to the other, and it seems simple. Like, how do you make that happen?
Yeah, they're like, this is our infinite mass of cubes. We use this to make wormholes.
Yeah. Boop. Yep. There you go.
Love it.
Cool. Yeah. I again, love this story. Can't recommend it enough. I do want to lift up before we talk about like rankings, and there's a book I want to share, and it's Madeline Engel wrote a book called Walking on Water, Reflections on Faith and Art. And it's kind of, she, because of A Wrinkle in Time, the popularity of A Wrinkle in Time, she was asked to come and speak about the book and do, you know, speaking events and talk about what the book means to her, her faith means to her from diverse ways of different places, you know, whether it's the local library, local town, or even churches that ask her about that. And so this book really is a reflection on her both being a Christian and being an artist, being an author. And it talks about her creative process. And in the book, she shares that, you know, art and story is a way to bring cosmos out of chaos. If you think about like a recipe of how to do a painting. You have all these different colors that are just random, but then you combine the paints on a canvas to create a picture. And so you went from disorder to order, from chaos to like a cosmic picture. In the same way with story, you have all these different words, and then you combine the words into sentences, and then you combine those sentences into paragraphs, and the paragraphs to create a story that then becomes an icon and a symbol of truth, a vehicle of truth for the world. Or those who are reading it. And so you move again from chaos to cosmos. And so she talks about being co-creator with God. What makes us human? Being co-creators with God, with art and poetry and story. And really that's where it's all about. And so when people ask her what's the difference between Christian and secular? She picks that apart a little bit, which I think we've talked about here on Systematic Ecology as well, that like, yeah, art is art, poetry is poetry, beauty is beauty, love is love. Like you know truth when you see it. And so the separation of secular and spiritual is a really fine line. You know, there's things that are dedicated to God, but poetic, art, music, if it's beautiful and it creates meaning for folks, then perhaps there's some sacredness behind that. Let's see what else I wanted to share about that. She said in the book, one of my favorite quotes, "We don't judge great art. It judges us." And the same goes for story. Like in a sense that great stories, we don't judge great stories. They judge us. They bring out the best in us. They hold up a mirror to us of who we are, who we want to be or not be. And I find that absolutely beautiful. And then she has this quote, "There's nothing so secular that it cannot be made sacred, be sacred." That is one of the deepest messages of the incarnation. Let me read that again. "There is nothing so secular that it cannot be sacred." And that is one of the deepest messages of the incarnation. God becoming human in Christ, putting flesh on for us. God, in that act, God says, your matter matters. The physical realm, everything about it, the earth, your skin, your blood, who you are is important to me, and I have made sacred. And so she plays around with that in the book. So that is my recommendation. I have another recommendation in a moment. But if you're interested in her work and how she viewed the world, go and read and pick up a copy. Again, it's an easy read. It's not too hard. It's pretty quick read. Walking on Water, Reflections on Faith and Art. TJ, have you heard about that book? Have you heard anything about that? Is the first time you hear about it?
This is the first time for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a good reflection. And especially for those who are aspiring story writers or artists or poets and who are wrestling with how to be a Christian in the world and how to express themselves in a way that's authentic to themselves and their own faith. I think she has a great posture when it comes to that. She, again, a lifelong Episcopalian, and faith was a big part of her life. And so I recommend that book. TJ, what would you rank if you had to rank A Wrinkle in Time, and then they make a recommendation about it? What would you, we talked about, we don't judge great stories, they judge us, but here we are getting ready to judge. We're going to not listen to her for a moment.
Definitely.
Totally ignore what she said. How would you rank? What would you recommend?
It does a great job at giving you that sense of like nostalgia almost. Even like you've never read it, it makes you feel nostalgic because you can just tell you're reading something old.
Yeah.
I love it. Especially when it's sci-fi. It's like watching Flash Gordon. You're like, oh yeah, man, you thought. Yeah. But I'm gonna give it like 8.5, maybe a 9. It's a really good story. And I really, really need to read the 4 sequels. Slight missed opportunity there on my part.
I believe in you. I believe in you, TJ. I believe you can do it. If anybody can.
As far as a recommendation, I brought it up a minute ago, and it made me remember To Sleep in a Sea of Stars by Christopher Paolini. Please read it. Aragon, The Inheritance Cycle, they're good books. So some people, he wrote them, he started them when he was 16. Give him a break. It gets a little rough. He's grown. His writing is better. He handles sci-fi really well. And the sequel comes out May 21st.
There you go. We're only a few days. I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but at the time of recording, we're a few days away from May. Man, I can't believe we're already in May. But yeah, that's good. That's right around the corner. Love that. Good, good, good. Yeah, I would rank that up to, just because it's so foundational and formative for me as a young reader, and then reflecting back on kind of fantasy and then faith and science, I give it a strong 9 too. Like, in terms of, there's a reason why this is a classic and why many people talk about it and why they've tried to make a made-for-TV movie and Disney trying to make its movie. A recommendation, I would read the book first before watching the Disney movie. I don't want to like crap on Disney, but sometimes their choices, I'm like, man, don't deviate from the book. There's a reason why she wanted to talk about the light bringers and she brought up Jesus. Don't be scared to bring up Jesus' name. You're not going to alienate half the world. Maybe you will. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get more audience from different countries that are scared of the word Jesus. But anyway, she brings it up and then quotes Psalms and quotes John. That was my disappointment of the movie. But in terms of the characters and how they portray the characters, not a bad thing. But I'm going to recommend the graphic novel called A Wrinkle in Time. The graphic novel adapted and illustrated by Hope Larson. It is what I read to get ready for today. I've read the book and the novel many times, but this particular graphic novel is fantastic. The art's great, it's dynamic. She doesn't deviate from the story. Of course, it's adapted, so there's more detail you can get in the book. But in terms of this particular story in the graphic novel, you can pick it up anywhere. Go to your local comic book store and ask them to get it for you. It's a fantastic fantastic graphic novel. So that's my recommendation. Go out and get that graphic novel and then read A Wrinkle in Time, read the graphic novel, and then read Walking on Water by Miss Engel.
And don't watch the movies.
You said don't.
Don't watch the movies.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe at some point down the road. Because reading is not watching movies, is it? Is that one thing we said? No.
Yeah.
All reading counts.
It's not reading. It's watching a movie.
Okay. Just checking. All reading counts.
Maybe the 2018 one. I haven't seen it. I did see, though, where Madeline L'Engle's saw the TV movie from 2004. And I believe her exact words were, "I thought it would be bad, and it is."
and then God rest her soul, she died 3 years later. Oh, man. 2018, I was very hopeful for that movie and hoping Disney could. And it's a beautiful movie. They do great work, the special effects. But some of the things they leave out, the spiritual dimension, the religious dimension, the Christian dimension, I'm like, man, it's a little suspect for me. But... I love a lot of what Disney does, but I didn't like how they handled A Wrinkle in Time. And there's a reason why I didn't get great reviews because of that. But yeah, we're going to recommend this book. All reading counts. You'll hear more about what that means to our other hosts and other books and other readings. Perhaps we'll do a pop-up event at a library and where you can get a All Reading Count shirt that will go to benefit that particular library. I don't know what we have planned. Yeah. We have some creative stuff happening and we hope that you will like and that you'll follow, that you will review this episode, that you'll share with a friend or an enemy. Because TJ says, hey, Jesus said, love your enemies and share good things with your enemies as well. So who knows? That might open up a door of reconciliation, and the man with red eyes who's trying to lure you into the darkness can say it'll soften the heart because of love. Maybe. That's good. Maybe. The potential's there. The divine lore is there, as our process friends would say. Thanks for listening, folks. We know there's lots and lots of geeky stuff out there and a lot of choices. We appreciate you and we appreciate all that you do to help the podcast keep going. Let us know what you think about this book. Let us know what you're reading. Let us know your favorite avenue and way to consume stories. What type of reading? If we say all reading counts, challenge us and let us know the type of reading and the kind of reading that you're doing so we can lift that up as well. And we appreciate you. TJ appreciates you. And in the midst of the hurricane, of all that's going on, we're going to pull for the hurricanes for TJ. And we're going to say, in the eye of the hurricane, you are safe, you are loved, to share the faith and share the geek. Okay, friends, that was our episode on All Reading Counts with a Wrinkle in Time, one of our favorite stories of all time, speaking of time. And we're going to do a bonus question for our Patreons. We're going to do a TJ and I are going to reveal or answer the question. If we could write or create any story in any genre, what would it be? And so I'm a big story consumer, and so is TJ. And so I think you're dying to know. If there's a story we have to write and create, how would we do it? What would it be about? And what genre would it be? And what format would it be? So hop on over to Patreon. If you're not a member of Patreon, join today just for a couple bucks. Support the show. And you can get a lot of cool extra stuff, including the bonus question. TJ, what are your opinion? What's some of the benefits of being a patron?
Then you're paying us. So you're kind of like our boss. And then you get to make demands.
Creative control over the show is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you get access to like the private channels on our Discord server.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Discord's fun. Could they fire us if,
maybe it depends on how much they give us. That's right. Like, it's a hard sell, but if you give us like $3,000 to kick somebody off the show, we'll consider it.
We'd have to give them a cut, because if it was me, I'd want a cut of that. But anyway, be a patron, creative control, extra content, extra conversations with us. Hop over there and we're going to answer this question for you. We'll see you in a minute.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our Captivate options. That's when you send us a little extra money to just help us along with our project. But what do you get by giving us that extra money? Well, you have access to any future online D&D campaigns. You get extra bonus question content, which we do at least 48 times a month. You can make a one-time donation here of any amount to help support the show. This helps us with our overhead. That includes the editing software that we use, the recording software that we use, the marketing that we have to do for the show, the equipment that we all need to help out with the show, and more. So thank you for what you do. Head out to Captivate. Help us out. We really appreciate what you do. See you later.
Hey friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic Ecology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that, you get money off your ticket, and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite host here at Systematic Ecology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that, and we thank Tripp for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.